Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Matt Katz, reporter in the WNYC newsroom, filling in for Brian today. Our next guests are the hosts and producer of the great NPR podcast, Embedded. Producers there partnered with the nonprofit newsroom, The Marshall Project, over the last year or so, and they took a look at how the police department in Yonkers tried to reform itself. Joining us to talk about the show and Yonkers and the police are host Kelly McEvers and producer Daniel Gurma, who just happens to be a former Brian Lehrer Show intern. Daniel, welcome back. Kelly, pleasure to have you on WNYC.
Hey, Matt. Thanks so much for having us.
Oh, absolutely. It's great to be back.
Great. Excellent. Listeners, do you live in Yonkers? Have you had an experience with the police there in the past? Have things changed when it comes to police-community relations over the last 10 years or so? Yonkers or nearby residents, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Okay, Kelly, you've done a variety of shows on Embedded, and you've tried to you embed yourself in different communities and try to understand different issues from the inside out. Why did you want to look at police reform for this season, and how did you end up in Yonkers?
We've kind of been obsessed with policing for a while, right? You know, I think after a string of high profile shootings of Black people by police over the last few years in kind of what I loosely call the Black Lives Matter era, starting from Ferguson onward, we at the show just wanted to dig into policing at different times. We were really fascinated back in 2016 with like how videos of these incidents, affected conversation. And after George Floyd, I think we all decided that it was really important to dig back in and look at this. And so we decided to look at all the different ways that people were calling for the police to change. Obviously, one of those ways is reform. It's not the only thing that people are calling for. So we teamed up with the Marshall Project, and they suggested that we go to Yonkers. We were working with an investigative reporter named Simone Weichselbaum. She knew about Yonkers. Sorry, I'm just hearing some people in the background. I'm hoping they'll mute. It's hard for me to talk and listen at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Is that on our end?
Yeah, sorry. I could just hear it coming through. So I'm like, here.
Okay, we'll try to figure out what that is. Yeah, so you know, Kelly, you're such a radio pro that we wanted to make things as difficult as possible for you.
As difficult as possible. Yeah. No, it's fine. Yeah, so Simone Weichselbaum suggested we go to Yonkers. The idea was Yonkers is a place that has been under oversight by the Department of Justice. This is a thing that happens to police departments right around the country. Mm-hmm. You probably heard about it in Ferguson, Baltimore, Seattle, LA, famously New Orleans, cities where police departments have a history of misconduct. The DOJ will come in, investigate, and put those departments under different types of oversight. Yonkers is not in what's called the consent decree, which is really common nowadays.
Right.
Common during the Obama administration, but it is under an agreement with the DOJ. So that's the idea is like, look, there's a bunch of things that you need to do to reform. So we wanted to look at that. But also Yonkers is headed by, was headed by this charismatic police commissioner who, had bought into the idea of reforming under the DOJ and was really pushing people to do it and was, accessible to us. And so that just seemed like a good formula of things that we wanted to look at and see how reform, if reform was working, and if so, how does it work?
Got it. So this police chief that you mentioned, John Mueller, who was there until very recently, Dan, can you give us a sense of him and how he came to be a reformer?
Yeah. Funnily enough, when the DOJ first came into Yonkers to look at the police department, John Mueller was not very happy that they had come to town. He wasn't definitely the man he is today, but he started getting involved in a kind of reform circle that exists within the policing community called PERF. I'm blanking on the
Police Executive Research Forum.
Right.
Yeah.
Executive Research Forum. Basically, a lot of high-ranking officers that get advanced degrees in criminal justice and try and reimagine the way policing works and try and find ways to reform their practices. And so he got into this kind of this world of reform, and it really started changing his opinion about police reform as a whole, to the point where he ended up embracing what the DOJ was looking into and trying to change. And I think if I was going to describe, he's kind of a one man show that really came in with a lot of energy, a lot of zeal to try and opt the department into the reforms that the DOJ wanted to bring into Yonkers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how does he envision, let's say, for example, making officers less aggressive with people? What is his stated plan when it comes to that?
I think he has a few things that he states in his plan. One is making sure that the police are having a positive relationship with the community. Another is this thing called precision policing, where they're trying to have a very pointed way of going about crime prevention. And also this idea of procedural justice, which is really, if the way that he would describe it, is treating people with respect when you are a police officer, so they don't feel right. that you're being antagonized.
I want to actually play a clip from the first episode of Embedded for this season. Talks about procedural justice. Just to set it up for a second, the first woman's voice that we'll hear is Simone Weichselbaum, who Kelly mentioned before. She's formerly of the Marshall Project, now of NBC News. She helped you report out this season. After that, we'll hear from Yonkers Police Chief Mueller, and they're talking about this concept of procedural justice. Here goes.
So first, what is procedural justice? It's this idea that if you train cops to treat people fairly, like at a normal interaction, a traffic stop, a pedestrian stop, and sort of builds on that foundation, if there's a crime in your neighborhood, you're like, oh, that cop, you know, 2 weeks ago treated me fairly. I'm going to go help them solve that crime or be a witness in something. And one leads to another. However, what I found in Chicago, that although they were taught these things, it wasn't, like, digested. So the cops on the street weren't necessarily doing it.
And Simone says people weren't helping cops solve crimes.
And the cops were complaining, well, they're not helping us solve it. And then the community feels, well, they treat us like shit. We're not going to help you. And it's like the dog chasing its tail.
So I will rebut Simone's point here. The metric
it's not about counting how many crimes people help you solve, Mueller says.
The whole point of procedural justice for me is just developing a better relationship with the community. Most people probably have a personal interaction with the police less than 5 times in their entire life. So we got to make all 5 of those count. You know, for us, it has to do with what is the day-to-day interaction. It's those very minor...
What's your stat? What's your data point, Simone asks.
For what?
To measure. So what are you measuring that's successful?
I haven't measured anything yet.
Simone wants is evidence. She wants Mueller to show her the data that procedural justice works. Mueller says Yale University researchers are working on this. They eventually surveyed more than 1,400 people in Yonkers to see how they feel about the cops.
They found there was a high level of trust in the Yonkers police, but that trust was highest among white people and lowest among Black people.
That was a clip from the latest season of Embedded. Kelly, what were your observations of the effect of procedural justice? Did you come away from reporting this season thinking that this was a meaningful method of reform, or kind of more of the same, and that police-community relations will still be as fraught as always?
I mean, that's such a complicated question. It's such a good question, right? Like, when you dig in on policing and all of these different training programs that everyone has, each one of the programs has like an acronym and a title. And, you know, there's a bunch of people who go around and like train cops in this stuff. And so, you know, procedural justice is kind of just one of the more recent ones, right? Mm-hmm. There's de-escalation training. There's all kinds of of these like programs that cops can go through. And so that's the big question, right? Is like, does it work? You know, you sit in a couple of trainings for a couple of days over the course of a year. And like, does it actually change how you do things?
Right.
And that's really hard. Like, it's hard to quantify, right? You heard us talk about the Yale survey, right? Where they talk to people in the community about how they feel about the cops. And look, I will say that we talked to a lot of people in Yonkers who feel like the cops are more respectful, that they have better sense of the community that they police, right? That they have better connections with the community. And John Mueller will tell you that's not just the job of the commissioner himself, but that's all up and down, right? All up and down the ranks and the supervisors and the cops. And, you know, frankly, it's like a new batch of cops. They're younger. And, you know, they listen to people when they talk about their concerns. All of that said, right, there's still a lot of people in the community who feel like the police could do a lot better job, right? They could account for the past in better ways. And we can talk about that more. And that, you know, there's still this disconnect in the community because, frankly, the police force does not look like the community of polices, right? It's still an overwhelmingly white police department and a city that's, you know, very racially diverse.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's like it's this one little training program isn't going to fix everything. But we did see people on the street, right? Like we saw cops practicing de-escalation, right? Like actually engaging with people in ways that seemed like, you know, there was more respect on the street. Now, was that because we were there recording, right? You know this,
hard
right?
To know. Right, always hard to know, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is the effect that we have.
Sure. Well, let's hear from some folks in Yonkers. We have a caller from Yonkers and then any other residents of Yonkers who want to give us a buzz and tell us their experiences with the police there. The number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's go to Jonathan in Yonkers. Hey there, Jonathan. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me. Longtime listener. Glad I could contribute.
Excellent.
So I disagree with the speaker's comment about diversity of it. I'm finding that they're actually quite a different mix of people, men, women, different racial groups. So I think it's not overwhelmingly white as what I thought it would be when I got here. And I do find the training excellent. I just ran up the staircase. I left Greenwich Village for a three-story building here. So they're very good at de-escalating. They've had to de-escalate me because I'm constantly complaining about noise coming from a boombox noise coming from a commuter train station near my house.
Okay.
Which I can hear on a summer night. So they have to calm me down when I'm yelling at them. And I think they do a pretty good job of speaking to the people making the noise, asking them to please move on.
Huh.
So I'm not sure if they're giving as many tickets. Now, they just called me up 2 weeks ago after I had an incident. The sergeant actually came to my house. At this point, they know who I am. Told me he issued a ticket, and he was very very nice and asked me, if are things getting better, do you find less noise? I mean, people can hang out on the street, but they have to be respectful to the neighbors, too.
Sure. So have things gotten a little bit better? Do you think the police
response? Yeah, quieter. Actually, they have they seem to have cars patrolling. Once a problem starts, they seem to put resources toward correcting it. And, you know, basically it's just a car pulls up to the area, tells them you can't do this, you know, turn it down. So I think they're making an effort to make everyone happy.
Thank you, Jonathan. Really, really appreciate you chiming in here. That's super helpful. It's so interesting, Kelly and Dan, how so much of what police work is involves stuff like this. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, chasing down bad guys down the block and high-speed car chases. It's these little quality of life issues that people call 911 about, that they call the police about, and how officers handle such situations and avoid escalating such situations into something bigger is a huge part of what amounts to police community relations, right?
Yeah, it is a huge part. And I think one thing that we really gotten to learn, at least looking at Yonkers and the Yonkers police, is how much they have to do. In so many types of situations, they are really the only people available to call, whether it be a violent crime, whether it be a domestic dispute, whether it be a mental health crisis. And there are some people ask the questions are, do the police have to do too much in that regard? Are they being stretched too thin because they have so much on their plate? Which is, I think, a fair question to ask and might be something that cops have to ask themselves too.
Yeah,
it's a big question across the country right now, right? I mean, there's studies have shown that, like, what is it, around 3 or 4% of all calls that come in, only that low number, it actually involved violence, right? And so then it's like you get into the questions of, like, do you need a cop in a situation like that? And we look into that in one of our episode, actually, that's coming out tomorrow. And I think John Mueller, when he talks about this too, when he talks about procedural justice, some of the things that he's, you know, learned from these police conferences and conversations that are happening at the national level is like, and he tells this to his cops, you know, like this, we're in the business of customer service, right? Like we're not supposed to be in the business of being antagonistic with the people that we serve, right? Like people are calling us and asking us for help with something. And so we need to show up and we need to be just polite and transparent. That's sort of all procedural justice is about. It's just sort of narrating the situation and saying, here's why I've pulled you over. Here's what I'm going to do next. Here's what I expect of you. Do you have any questions for me? You know, kind of simple stuff, but stuff that, I mean, I think most of us know doesn't always necessarily happen when you have an interaction with a police officer.
You referenced the episode that comes out tomorrow. I want to play a clip from that. First, I got to do a little business. I'm Matt Katz from the WNYC Newsroom, filling in for Brian Lehrer. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. This is New York and New Jersey New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Okay, I want to play a clip from episode 4 of Embedded. This involves Chief Mueller, who we've been talking about, and he comes across a situation, and you guys are there with your microphones.
But as we start walking, I have to ask Mueller a question that a lot of people are asking right now.
That woman, what does she mean?
Probably
like right now. In that moment when you called the cops. You are the cops, but you you can call in the cops.
Yeah. She needs...
Well, like, does she need a cop?
Well, the question is, who else do we call? You know, she's passed out on the sidewalk as far as what I saw when we walked by, right? Did you watch that?
Right now,
we don't know if she's sleeping.
Is she going to be afraid of a cop?
No.
If they show up?
Not our cops. Not at all.
That's the kind of situation where I think some people would say... Call social services.
Okay, so what is the dispatch number? Is someone available to go? So when you say call, who do we call? What is their response time? And who is it?
Right, and so it's like the argument then is like you guys are just faster and more available.
No, what I say is we're the default, whether we should be or not. And it was through no design of our own. That, you know, until you can design something as responsive and as rapid as the police for those type of situations, you're going to have to call us.
And then Mueller changes the subject.
So, Kelly, here the context is that you're with Mueller. There's a woman sleeping on the street. He calls an officer to get help. And then you go back and forth a little bit. Like, why are police involved in this kind of thing? And there's other scenes from the season, like a woman who's clearly in mental distress. And the cops, who are not, you know, not trained mental health workers, they're forced to try to de-escalate the situation. Did you run up against that a lot? That you're like, well, maybe the traditional police response is not necessarily appropriate for all the reasons why we call 911?
Right. I mean, this is something so many people are talking about right now, right? Mm-hmm. In like policing circles. You've reported on it. I know. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of pilot programs in New York City, or there's, you know, a couple neighborhoods that have this pilot program in New York City. It's called Be Heard, right? And the idea is to divert 911 calls, you know, so right at the dispatcher moment, when somebody answers that phone call, is to figure out, you know, is this a situation that involves like a weapon? Is this a potentially really violent situation? Or is this something that doesn't need a cop? And for those programs in New York City, they've got, you know, social workers hired to be on call when it isn't necessarily a cop. That call is going to go to, you know, to the EMTs basically at a fire station. And an EMT and a social worker, unarmed, are going to go and respond to that situation. One of the interesting things about it, and we spent a little time, we spent, you know, a couple hours with them up in the Bronx one afternoon when they were doing their work, is that they told me was the great thing about their job and the way they do it is they can take time. You know, they're not in a hurry. Right. Somebody's having a mental health crisis. They don't need to just like, you know, figure something out. Right. And get it resolved. They can just stand there and talk to somebody.
Yeah.
We know like a Washington Post analysis found that, you know, one in four police shootings involve somebody who's having some kind of mental health crisis. You know, there's definitely an outcry right now for people saying this is, we need some different kind of solution. You know, like roughly 20 cities around the country are trying programs like this. You know, Denver, Albuquerque, LA, Oakland, like I said, this program in New York City. Westchester County, where Yonkers is, they've started one too. It's a little bit different. There's not full-time social workers set aside to answer these calls. But what they are working on is diverting those 911 calls either to someone on the phone who can help the person who's in mental health crisis, or folks on the ground who can respond. The thing that's different is they're probably likely to respond with the police right. most of the time. And that's really the thing, right? If you look at these programs, it's like, is it a full civilian response or are the cops going to come too? For someone like Sharon Atwell, this woman that you mentioned who we met in our series, this is someone who has mental illness, right? She was arrested 36 times by the Yonkers cops. From 2016 until now. And the cops themselves acknowledge that this is not the thing for her, right? Like, they want to help her. They tried to help her. But like you said, they're not equipped to help her. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you could, and Mueller's right, you can't just flip some switch and automatically just have a bunch of people who are there to help her instead of the cops. So this is an incredibly important question right now in policing. And it's good to see some of these programs up and working. And there's some decent data about how they do work. And they do cost cities less money in the end.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned Mueller. Dan, where is Chief Mueller? The main character in your season here up and left. Tell us what he's up to, because it's very interesting to our listeners.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, over the course of our reporting, quite abruptly, John Mueller left the Yonkers Police Department to join the MTA, the Metropolitan Transit Authority police, to head them up. And it kind of posed a new question, which is also an important question, which is the staying power of reform when someone who had been the champion of reform leaves. A lot right. of times you have issues where an individual becomes the face of a type of movement, and it really is the driving force behind a certain type of change. And you obviously hope that change can persist and that they've planted the roots of change within a department or whatever organization they're in. But people have questions about whether things are going to keep getting better or if they're going to stay the same or if they may revert back to a way things were that people don't want.
The DOJ is still monitoring Yonkers. They're still under this agreement.
Right. That goes back to 2007, right?
It goes all the way back to 2007. Wow. Yeah. But they entered into the actual agreement in 2016. So the DOJ was technically investigating Yonkers for all those years.
Uh-huh.
And since 2016, they've been in this agreement, right, where they basically said, like, we're going to sign on the dotted line and we're going to make all of these changes. It's this long list of changes, right? And, you know, a lot of it is like reporting, and people say, oh, it's like paperwork, but it actually is the kind of stuff that can make a difference in a department. It's like, how do you report a use of force? How do you write that down? How do you characterize it? And then how does that officer then get tracked over time? You know, is there a way to look at an officer who's got several times that they've used force against a person in the community? Should there be like a red flag that goes up and says, huh, we got to look out for this person. We got to discipline this person. We got to spend more time investigating complaints made by people from the community. So those are the kinds of changes that are on that list and that are still being required of Yonkers. And as Mueller will say, right, it's not just a one-man band. you know, there are people up and down the system who have gotten on board with doing things in a different way. And he'll be the first to tell you that, like, you know, just because he's gone doesn't mean they're going to stop. Like, we ran down a whole list of stuff with him. You know, is this program going to continue? Is this program going to continue? Is this one? Is this one? And the answer is yes, right? So a lot of the stuff that was put in place during these reform years are going to continue. The big question for us, and one of the things we spent a bunch of time on in our second episode, is looking into, you know, allegations of misconduct in the past. I mean, I feel like if you scratch the surface of any police department of the 18,000 plus police departments in this country, you're going to find some stuff.
Sure.
But Yonkers has a pretty particular history of wrongdoing. It's why the DOJ came in the first place. And there's still a lot of people in this community who feel like that past has not been, you know, answered for. Like, there's still a lot of, you know, officers who either stayed on the job or, you know, were promoted or were allowed to retire with their pensions, who people in the community know have been accused of multiple incidents of wrongdoing. So we looked into that too. And that's sort of just this like unresolved thing in this community and in a lot of communities, obviously in New York City and beyond. And so we really tried to look hard at how you deal with that too. And there's no great perfect answer there either.
Before I let you guys go, I want to take one more call from Yonkers. John. Hey, John, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, thanks for calling in.
Can you hear me?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, hi. Hi, I was a member of one of the organizers of a group of concerned downtown residents and stakeholders called the Yonkers Downtown Committee for the Waterfront.
Oh, yeah, John, we met you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are at Paxos. That's right.
Yeah.
So,
we had breakfast with you.
Well, I remember that. And I'm just calling because I'm concerned that it sounds like there's a little bit of an inference here about all of this kind of being laid at the feet of John Mueller when he was under the confines of what lawmakers and the courts and City Hall. We thought that Mueller was doing an amazing job of trying to deal with all of these constraints and that he was always available to us. The meeting that we had at Paxos was a regular thing. We also had town hall meetings where we had 75 to 95 people come at Phillips Manor Hall. Mueller instigated that. He gave everybody his cell phone. You could contact him anytime. And that was a diversified amount of people. There were Black Latinos. And it was the kind of meeting where the mayor came a few times. We had commissioners come. So there was, and Mueller was he was the heartbeat of all that with his communication with the neighborhood. So I just kind of feel like he needs a little bit of a positive spin on the job that he did here. And again, we are actually dismayed that he left. We wish the new commissioner all the best, and we wish John Mueller really all the good luck that he's going to need when he's working with the NTA. But he's somebody that we really regret is not going to be here anymore. We felt very, very happy that he was in charge.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good point, and it's something you see in police departments all over the country, right? For different reasons, commissioners who come in and do a good job, they move on and they do other things. And that has you asking questions in places, you know, like Houston or New Orleans or Baltimore or Philly or anywhere, right? Like, what happens when the personality, that person who's so committed, right, to having a relationship with the community? Like you said, John, we heard this from so many people. I can't even tell you.
Driving around with John Mueller, and people are recognizing him from his car and saying hello. I mean, that's the kind of impact he had in the Yonkers community. It was very clear.
Yeah. And so, right. And so it's a good point that you make, right? Like, when that, not everybody's going to be that kind of personable person. That's fine. You can't expect everybody to be the same way. But when that drive, that commitment is gone or moves on, what does it mean for, reform efforts?
You know, after lauding the chief here, I should note that we have a Twitter user who chimed in and said, why is Brian Lehr, meaning the Brian Lehr Show, I'm filling in for him. Why is the Brian Lehr Show engaging in propaganda this morning, police propaganda? And, you know, we haven't talked about it a lot, but I will say that, you know, reporter Simone Wechselbaum dug into police misconduct for this series. I mean, really disturbing scenarios involving police abuse. You also had my former colleague, WNYC reporter George Joseph, a former WNYC reporter who's investigated police abuse in next door Mount Vernon. He's on this season. So, you know, this isn't a simple story of
right.
a hero police chief who comes in and then the community loves the police department. It's a lot more nuanced and complicated than that this season of Embedded, right?
In our second episode, I mean, we spent an entire episode, basically the greater part of a year, looking into the misconduct of the Yonkers police. You can't just walk in and everybody says, look, we're doing a great job, we're reforming, when multiple people in the community, right? We didn't just pull this out of our own hats, right? It was multiple people in the community saying, look, I was wronged by the police. I feel that I have not gotten justice, right? Yeah. I have filed complaints. I have sought, you know, reprieve, and I have not gotten that. And so we had to hear those people out and we had to look into their concerns. And I will tell you that what we found was, some patterns of wrongdoing that have never been, you know, talked about on the record before, and in particular, falsifying warrants. People who went to jail for years at a time, wrongfully in several cases, and that was just barely scratching the surface. We looked into two officers who had been convicted and fired from the force. So as I like to say, these guys were already the low-hanging fruit. We went to the DA of Westchester County and, you know, put it to her and asked her what she was going to do about it.
Right.
She's looking into the allegations, right? And so I just want people listening to know that, like, that is definitely part of any conversation when you're talking about the police. You got to look into it. And again, I think the cops would say, are you just trying to find something bad to say because you're the media. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, this is what we were hearing from people in the community. This mm-hmm. is what this is. These are the questions they're still asking. And they're saying it publicly. They're not just saying it to journalists. They're saying it at public forums, at, you know, after George Floyd, at protests. You know, these are people who are known to the known to the cops and, you know, who feel like they want justice.
Well, it's a great season. Listeners, get embedded wherever you get your pods. My guests have been NPR's Kelly McEvers and Dan Gurma from the Embedded podcast. Kelly, Dan, thanks so much for this conversation and for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Matt.